Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan. Welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Today we're going to be focused on the question of human rights, in particular that of the Rohingya people of Myanmar. Now, recently in the news, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia was planning to deport some 250 Rohingya, but that's a tiny fraction of the number of refugees there. In fact, I just learned that there are over 300,000, and that's one of the numbers that was reported in Al Jazeera. Now, to help me understand what's going on with the Rohingya situation, not just in Saudi Arabia, but most importantly in Bangladesh, where there are huge camps of refugees, Matthew Smith, he's the founder and chief executive officer of Fortify Rights. He previously worked at Human Rights Watch and has authored several reports on the issues in Myanmar and China. And also Eric Paulson, who's the legal director of Fortify Rights, former executive director of Lawyers for Liberty, and of course, a reasonably regular guest on this show, recently named to the ASEAN Intergovernmental Commission on Human Rights. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being here. This is the book, a rather grim report of the situation of the Rohingya people. But perhaps, Matthew, we could begin with just telling us, what is the situation now? Myanmar, on the ground in Myanmar, and then, of course, with all the displaced people, whether internally or externally, what is the rough sketch of the situation of the Rohingya people?
Well, unfortunately, right now, the situation in Myanmar has not changed in any meaningful or positive way for the Rohingya people. Since these attacks that we documented in 2016 and 2017, there's, of course, been a massive flow of refugees into Bangladesh and elsewhere. For those left behind in Myanmar, there are still restrictions, severe restrictions on freedom of movement, restrictions on livelihoods, so people aren't allowed to fish or pursue other livelihoods, restrictions on aid groups who would provide life-saving humanitarian aid to the displaced or otherwise in need populations. And so it's safe to say that for the several hundred thousand, between 400,000 and 600,000 Rohingya who are still in Rakhine State in Myanmar, they're undergoing mass arbitrary detention, I think is a fair way to categorize it.
Right. So when we look at the numbers, it's extraordinary. We're looking at, what, 1 million people in Bangladesh and then in various countries who are of Rohingya origin or Myanmar origin, Rohingya. Like I said, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the report from Al Jazeera saying hundreds of thousands there. There are, of course, Rohingya refugees here in Malaysia and in Pakistan, you've informed me. How many Rohingya as a community do we actually, was there a census done? Was there a sense of how many people we're talking about when we talk about the Rohingya community, whether inside Myanmar or outside?
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned a census because the Myanmar authorities conducted a census a few years ago and omitted the Rohingya population. They didn't do a proper census around the Rohingya. There was some data coming out from the Myanmar authorities at the time that put the population around 1.2 million in Myanmar. This was before the recent attacks. But beyond that, there are ways to piece it together. The Rohingya community itself does an excellent job of not only taking care of themselves, but in very difficult situations, but also providing, you know, basic data and facts about where people are and what they're doing. There's also UN data, certainly on from the Bangladesh camps. There's some tracking of the population there. So there are ways to piece it together. Right now, there are more Rohingya living outside of their homeland in Myanmar than inside.
Okay, Eric, tell us, if you can, about the situation in Malaysia. I mean, you know, and also your role in kind of looking at these issues from a legal perspective.
Right. The situation in Malaysia, it's grim. Even though I think the Rohingyas have been in Malaysia for several decades now. Over the years, the situation has improved somewhat, but it's not up to international standards. Malaysia tolerate their existence. They want them to stay here in the sense that they can't send them back to Myanmar because obviously they are stateless. But at the same time, they are not able to give them the legal guarantees that a refugee should have in any country. You should provide them with protection, the right to work, so that they are not extorted, because at the end of the day, you know, all refugees, they want some kind of legal certainty that they're able to move around, so that they're not arrested and detained and possibly, you know, they could suffer terribly while they're in detention.
You know, one of the things because we had was a couple of years ago, under the Najib Razak administration, there was a huge outpouring of the gestures of, you know, in solidarity with the Rohingya people, and there was a gathering at the stadium and so on and so forth. Because the Najib administration is no more, we have a new government, and the government that says it's committed to signing the Convention on Refugees. The fact that the government, even the previous administration, said it was going to do more for the Rohingya, and now the current government says that it's going to ratify international conventions that will give protection, does it make you hopeful?
Definitely. I think both the Prime Minister, Tun Mahathir Mohamad, and the Foreign Minister, Dato' Safina Abdullah, both of them have come out strongly in support of the Rohingya. And I think as far as the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto is concerned, they have also promised that they will take steps to try to resolve the situation of the Rohingya in Myanmar and to ratify the Refugee Convention. And so once that has been done, then I think Malaysia should clarify what are the steps that they can take to make sure that the framework is there to protect the Rohingya refugees in Malaysia.
Okay. Matthew, I mean, what is the purpose of an organization like 45 Rights? Is it about merely documenting, and I don't say merely, but documenting what happens on the ground, or is the thrust something more than taking that documentation somewhere?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, 45 Rights exists to prevent and remedy human rights violations, to promote the human rights for all. And the way that we do that is we're providing